Lunar Pages. I've entrusted my web properties to Lunar Pages for about 10 years. Web properties. Listen to me. I'm such a dork. Websites, that sort of thing. Now, if you own a business, large, small, or in between, reliable, scalable web hosting is something you require. Business hosting packages over at Lunar Pages are spectacular. They have all the tools, scripts, and support you need to run an efficient and secure business website. Listen to this. Not only do they have the latest cloud computing and storage, but they also offer dedicated IP and SSL certificates to secure your website transactions. Their patented website hack protection is called Secure Live. This service continually monitors your server and stops hackers before they get in. Hundreds of scripts that you can add to your business website with only a few clicks. They have language support for your developers, and your developers know what these are. Ruby on Rails, PHP, Perl, and Python. I don't have a clue, but your developers do. Lunar Pages. Their support team is right here in the USA. That's my favorite part about it. You call up and a guy from down the street picks up the phone and he can walk right up to your server. Look for their button on our sponsor page at our website, philhewlettandfriends.com. Click on the Lunar Pages button and you'll receive deep discounts exclusive to my listeners. 30-day money-back guarantee as well. Lunar Pages, check them out. Astronomers are finding a ton of new planets. Well, more than a ton if you actually weighed them out in space. A stunning number of planets, in fact. So what are the chances there's a planet teeming with life, societies, technology, governments, militaries? Just think about it for a second. Let's bring on our next guest. He's written several books and produced numerous documentaries for the History Channel and Discovery Communications, including the acclaimed Modern Marvels, Apollo 11. He's lectured at NASA's Johnson Space Center, written for the Jet Propulsion Labs, Caltech, Live Science, and Space.com. His most recent book, Curiosity, an inside look at the Mars rover mission. It's available in the store right now at our website. Rod Pyle, welcome back to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks for having me back. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. You are the hardest working science guy on the planet, aren't you?
Well, we'd like to think so, but I doubt it. Bill Nye's pretty tough working guy.
Well, yeah, certainly he is. But you're more fun to talk to, I must admit. How many planets have we discovered of late?
Well, thousands. The latest haul was about 1,284.
Just one haul.
That was one haul, and it's kind of – it's not misleading, but it's there's some smaller news in here, which is this is actually from a batch of data that the Kepler Space Telescope, which is this big instrument that was set up in 2009, follows in this orbit way behind Earth so that Earth doesn't get in the way.
Yeah.
And its job is just sit and stare at a patch of space for years or months at a time and look for exoplanets. But this last batch of planets that they pulled out – was done statistically because you can't sit and look at each one of them individually. And the data that they were looking at was a few years old. So it was actually before Kepler ran into those problems. There was a couple of problems a few years ago, then there was some more a few months ago. So this is from an older batch of data. But what that tells us is that there's a bunch more sitting, and this is just one small package of material they're looking at. There's going to be a lot more in there that we haven't really had a chance to comb through yet.
What's the difference between a planet and an exoplanet?
A planet's in our solar system and exoplanets in somebody else's.
Oh, I got you. All right.
Yeah. So if it's another star, it's an exoplanet.
So neighbors and foreigners.
Yeah. And up until about 20 years ago, they didn't even know if there were any. We always assumed there were, right?
Uh-huh.
When I was a kid, they talked about, well, there must be planets under the stars. But we couldn't see them. So they set up Kepler. And since Kepler, they've actually found ways to also begin tracking these things from Earth-based telescopes. And then in a couple of years, the James Webb telescope is going to go up, which is the latest, greatest, biggest mega Hubble space telescope. And they assume they'll not only find more, but be able to start really identifying what the atmospheres are all about and what's going on up there.
Yeah, you know, when we take a picture with our smartphone, then we open it up in the editor and we can increase the sharpness. And so I wonder, once they get a bead on these planets, can they up the sharp? And see if there are people walking around on those orbs out there. Can they do that?
No, I can't find license plates on those planets yet. They can only do that on our own. It's tough because what the Kepler does, it's actually a wide field camera. It's like a wide angle lens. And it's looking at a chunk of space, like I said, for a long period of time.
Yeah.
And it will watch these stars. And what it's doing is looking for a slight dimming of a planet that happens to be moving between that star and us. So it's very much kind of a roll of the dice, luck of the draw kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so what you're getting is just a little bit of information. Then once you see one that has the right the right characteristics, you might want to look at it more closely and see if you can figure out how far it is from that star. Yeah. Is it in this so-called Goldilocks zone where Mars and Earth exist in our solar system, which is where we think life can can persevere because it's a rocky planet like ours. It's got water and an atmosphere and all that. So there's a lot more work still to do.
Rod, a think piece question for you.
Okay.
The more of this data that we receive, it obviously it's a numbers game. It increases the possibility that there's intelligent life out there. I mean, you can't deny that the odds increase with the thousands of planets that we're discovering. So the question is, do you think we as a civilization here on the planet Earth are beginning the transition process from the you know, more or less religious and cultural position that, God created this planet, and we have the hubris to believe that there's nothing else out there, intelligent but us. Are we transitioning away from that psyche to believe that we're part of some larger deal?
That's a fantastic question, and a lot of people think about that. And it's interesting, a couple of years ago, the Vatican astronomer, of all people, came out and said, look, I have no problem with extraterrestrials. I have no problem with life on other planets, evolved and intelligent like us. I'm just going to say that God created them too. So there may not be this wholesale shift that we're looking, that you're talking about, you know, towards just empirical scientific evidence. But it certainly seems like if we do find something, and a lot of people in the field think it's, you know, within the next 5 to 10 years, there's a lot of money going to this right now. There's a whole new search for extraterrestrial intelligence initiative happening with some money from a guy in Russia and Stephen Hawking's involved that's going to do a lot more intensive listening for more hours on radio telescope dishes. And when there is a detection and it's confirmed, then the big questions come up. And it's going to be very interesting to see how the cultures around the world handle that.
Yeah, yeah. And then people will have to go through a mandatory 100-year period of denial before they actually come to terms with it.
Well, you know, there's still a lot of people denying we ever landed on the moon. So,
oh yeah,
denial is the powerful mechanism.
You know, I think I told you once on a previous show that I found the soundstage where all of that was videotaped, and I found the backdrops of the moon, the whole thing.
I remember it.
Yeah. Hey, what do you think? Have we discovered life out there already? And just we're not those of us or those of you in the industry are just not allowed. You're hamstrung by whomever, the government or somebody else, not to say anything about it. What's your feeling on that? Have we already discovered something?
I don't think so. You know, that comes up a lot, kind of obliquely to that question, and then I'll get to the question. There are images from, for instance, the Mars Curiosity rover, which some researchers have looked at and thought, you know, this looks an awful lot like a fossilized form of life to me, maybe an algae mat from a long-vanished sea bottom or something like that. But you're talking about intelligent life that we can communicate with and so forth.
Yeah, like the ruins of a shopping mall. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, wouldn't that be great?
Yeah.
There's a Walmart on Uranus.
Space scientist humor. I love that.
But, you know, when you spend time at these NASA facilities, you meet an awful lot of fascinating, young, brilliant, and older brilliant, but the young ones are the ones that really strike you because they're so passionate people that are just so engaged in what they do. If there was a conspiracy, it would have to be really large because these people talk to each other. They don't like things being covered up. They're really against that. And from a more practical side, if you're sitting in the driver's seat at NASA and you've got a detection of intelligent life somewhere and you're looking at your budget, which has been flat for a decade, how are you going to get more money? Well, one way is to say, hey, look, there's people out there, you know, putting out top 40 radio shows just like we do down here. We really ought to talk to them, even though it's going to take the signals a long time to go back.
No, you call the chairman of the whatever committee that funds NASA and says, hey, we're pretty sure we saw a couple of dudes walking around on this exoplanet. We'd like the funding to and the chairman says, you say a word about this and I'm shutting NASA down.
Well, I guess that could happen. But again, you're also telling the hundreds of thousands of people that work in and around that organization that they got to be quiet. Yeah. And that's hard to do. I mean, but that's the core of any good conspiracy, right?
True.
Talk about, you know, the conspiracy theories around the Kennedy assassination or the moon landing or what have you. there's so many people involved in these things, and they're generally so bad at keeping secrets over a long period of time unless they're deeply inside the CIA. It's just hard to believe.
But one more question for you, Rod.
You bet.
How is it that we're making so many discoveries when all we hear, and you even referenced it, is that NASA doesn't have any money and it's lost its relevance?
I think what happened in this case was they just got very smart about how to design this instrument, the Kepler Space Telescope, and they got lucky that it worked as well as it did. You know, it was really a masterpiece of engineering. They didn't have any of the problems they had with Hubble, with the focus issues that they had to fix and all that. It went up there and started working right away. It's had some trouble since then, but during the primary mission, it worked exactly as planned. And this idea of watching these other stars to see if they dim for the right amount of time to indicate that there's a planet getting in the way of the light coming from it seems to have worked out really well. And then they've been able to verify that through other means. So I think it really was just a matter, in a lot of ways, of good design and serendipity.
Bill Nye, the science guy, ain't got nothing on you. Rod Pyle, the author of Curiosity, an inside look at the Mars rover mission, among a bevy of other books. But that one, for sure, is in the store at philhewlettandfriends.com. Sir, a pleasure to speak with you. We'll talk to you again.
Thanks. Have a good day.
All right. Thank you. You too. Hey, coming up, are you kidding me? An entire country powered by renewable energy. I don't know that that's possible. And what do you think about fast food workers? Not only do they have trouble with acne, but now they're having trouble competing with robots at the fast food restaurant. We'll talk about that and a whole lot more. But first, I want to introduce you to a company called Aquasana. Aquasana makes home water filtration systems that make drinking water from your tap absolutely delicious. They have the Rhino water filtration system. That's what it's called. Aquasana makes it. And it removes 97% of the chlorine from your tap water. And I bet you didn't know this, but that chlorine evaporates from your shower, and then it turns into gas, and it just floats around your house, and everybody's breathing it. Your kids are breathing it. They're getting sick. It permeates the air in your home. So if you filter your water properly, you'll remove that and breathe easier. They also removes heavy metals, herbicides, pesticides, industrial solvents. All that is in your tap water, and you need to get rid of it because your family deserves clean, safe, good-tasting water that you can cook with as well. And just for listening to me talk about Aquasana, you get 40% off and free shipping on a complete system. Go to the sponsor page right now at philhewlettandfriends.com. Click on the Aquasana button, and the complete 1 million gallon Rhino whole house filtration system, which usually sells for more than $1,600, is yours for just $978.99. Think about that. I know it's a big expense, but your family's worth it. Aquasana. Live healthy. All right, you're listening to Phil Hewlett and Friends. Dale Lopes is here today with Brooke Peterson, and we're having a good time talking about a whole lot of things. And when you hear these things and you want to comment about it, get a hold of us. There's so many ways to do it. Just go to the website, philhewlettandfriends.com, and click on the blue tab on the right. If you have a microphone on your computer, you can just leave us a voicemail. And it's free. We don't even ask for an email address. That's how free it is. And it's simple, very simple. Or you can go to our Facebook page. If you want to see what Dale looks like, he's a good looking guy. He's a little, people have said this to you. You look a little like Clark Kent, the old school Clark Kent, right? Yeah. He's a man of steel over here. And, we don't have his picture on the website yet, but Brooke's picture, her lovely photo is on the Meet the Friends page. And you can just, get a hold of anybody who's ever been on the show through, Facebook, Twitter, or the other social media, because we have links to all of that. So get a hold of us and let us know what you think. Just don't stalk us, please. That's just not nice.
I could use a good stalker. Speak for yourself.
Oh, you're into that sort of thing, huh?
No, why not?
Yeah. Like the sexual roulette people, you know? Just put your life on the line for a little excitement, exhilaration.
Yeah.
All right. Now, we rely on all sorts of energy to pump our lives here. Electricity, it's generated hydroelectricity, there you go. And we use coal, we use all sorts of things, solar. But everybody talks about renewables these days. What exactly are those? And tell us what happened in this one country.
Yeah, so I was really impressed by little Portugal. Little Portugal over there apparently went 4 solid days of powering its entire country on strictly renewables, which would be solar, wind, and hydropower.
Oh, okay.
That's pretty impressive, isn't it?
It is impressive.
I mean, I always kind of think of Portugal as being, you know, sort of bringing up the rear as far as progressive type of, you know, issues.
But no, nothing that leaves a big footprint, in other words, right? It's all clean, clean energy.
Clean energy, no fossil fuel.
Yeah. Wow.
Well, you know what's interesting about that is I just got back from a trip to Portugal, and being Portuguese, I was just fascinated to go there. And you wouldn't think that because it seems like, you know, Brooke was alluding to that. They're kind of like behind time, so to speak, because when you go there, people actually converse. They sit down. They talk. They have their pastry. They have coffee. And you don't see a lot of people on their cell phones. So for them to be, you know, somewhat advanced is remarkable because it's a different way of life. It really is over there.
I hope they're drinking some of that delicious Belgian beer because that's my favorite kind of, you know. They craft some good beer there in Belgium. Did you have some of that stuff? Or are you as a healthy specimen, not drinking any of the alcohol?
Well, no. Actually, I had a Moroccan beer. It was pretty good.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow. I haven't had one of those before.
Yeah.
Here's something you didn't know. You remember John Belushi, right?
Of course. Yeah.
Remember the movie Animal House? Everybody's seen Animal House five or six times, right?
Staple.
Remember the scene with the horse?
Yeah. Where's this going, Phil?
That horse and John Belushi made the same amount of money in Animal House. They both got paid $40,000.
What?
That's
wow.
Right.
Was it a famous horse?
I don't know. Just John Belushi wasn't all that famous at the time, apparently.
And I want you to know that horse is offended, too, by the way.
The horse may still be alive as well.
Wow, that's shocking, huh?
Yeah, it is absolutely shocking. You know what else is shocking is how often you go to a fast food restaurant and the kid behind the counter doesn't make eye contact, can't enunciate enough for you to understand what they just said, and can't make change, and a number of other things that really fall under the category of antisocial. So I think, come on, can't there be at least half of the kids out there that are applying for these jobs, have some social skills that beyond texting and whatever else it is that they have to worry about when they're teenage and adolescent, and give some service and actually smile and make eye contact and all that sort of thing. I mean, it almost is at the point now where, as a fast food consumer, I'd rather just talk to a robot.
And that's what we're going to, basically. I mean, guess who's getting replaced? Workers at fast food restaurants. And part of the reason is because the minimum wage is going up. Businesses don't want to pay that, so they're looking for other options, and they're going to these kiosks. And I went to a Panera Bread, and they kind of had something set up like that, where you walk in, and you go to a kiosk, and it has the menu, and it tells you how to go about it, that sort of thing. But I found it, for my first time, a little confusing, because there's so many choices, options, and things to do. So they still have workers there, and we had to be assisted, but a lot of these fast food restaurants are going toward that because of the minimum wage is going to go up, and I know in California the wages are going to be going up soon, too.
Yeah, so they have – yeah, so the kiosk – and I've seen the kiosk across the street from Angel Stadium, as a matter of fact. There's a Carl's Jr. in there, and they have a kiosk, and I started typing into it, and I couldn't figure out anything.
That's what I'm saying.
And I'm a technological wired kind of guy. And it didn't seem all that intuitive. And so I turned around. I looked at the people behind the counter. I looked back at the kiosk. I looked at the people. Looked at the kiosk. Oh, all right. I'll go to the counter. And they got my order wrong. Oh, man. Hey, the first hour of this edition of Phil Hewlett and Friends is done already. Up in the second hour, we'll talk with Sophie Egan. She's the author of the book Devoured, From Chicken Wings to Kale Smoothies. How We Eat Defines Who We Are. And Manny the Movie Guy reviews what looks like a pretty good lineup of movies coming out this weekend. That's coming up in the second hour of Phil Hewlett and Friends. Next! I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Ports of Call Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials as well as the South Bay's best champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Ports of Call Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsofcalldining.com or call 310-833-3553. Here's a great idea for your next outing, a cruise of the L.A. Harbor on a Spirit Cruises yacht. Whether you have a large party, a company outing, wedding reception, a reunion, or you need the perfect setting for a romantic evening, Spirit Cruises offers everything you need to relax and enjoy your time on the water. For a limited time, enjoy Sunday brunch at Portsacall Waterfront Dining right next door, and the first Spirit Cruises Harbor Cruise of the day is free. For more information, call 310-548-8080 or visit spiritmarine.com.